This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 15th, Income Tax Day, 2016. It's about 2 o'clock. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Students Press for Answers. Cub reporters question governor in visit to Capitol. Springfield. Governor Bruce Rauner spent part of Thursday morning fielding questions from a group of hard-nosed reporters. But these budding scribes weren't part of the usual State House press corps. They were fourth graders from Sangamon Valley East Elementary School in Harristown, carrying on an annual tradition that began during the administration of Governor Richard Ogilvie in the 1970s. Rauner welcomed each student and shook their hands as they filed into his ceremonial office on the second floor of the Capitol. The students formed a semicircle around the governor, and he made sure each one got a question in. Taking on the role of reporters for publications ranging from the Herald and Review, the Springfield State Journal Register, to do Reader's Digest and Sports Illustrated, the students asked Rauner about his favorite pastimes, bird hunting, fishing, and riding his Harley-Davidson, foods, juicy hamburgers and ice cream, and movies and TV shows, The Godfather and Casablanca, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and Gilligan's Island. Zara Athey, representing Reader's Digest, asked Rauner about his favorite books. He spends most of his time reading budgets and policy papers these days, he said, but he used to enjoy science fiction and fantasy novels such as The Andromeda Strain and the Dune series and the Lord of the Rings trilogy when he was younger and had more time to read for pleasure. Zara said he thought it would be a good question to ask because she likes to read. Her favorites are the Harry Potter. I think it's Zara said she thought it would be a good question to ask because she likes to read. Her favorites are the Harry Potter and Percy Jackson series. I think the experience was quite enjoyable, she said, of the chance to question the governor. While they steered clear of the state's historic budget impasse, the other controversial issues, some of the students' questions put Rauner on the spot. Mary Irwin asked, which city or town in Illinois do you admire the most or visit the most often? Boy, Rauner said with a laugh, that's a hard question for a politician to answer. You can't really truly give like one answer. That's not really possible. The governor said one of his favorite parts of the job is traveling the state and meeting people in the communities he visits. He added that he tries to visit schools as often as possible. Jarrett McKittrick asked Governor Rauner a question that could well have been posed by a professional reporter. If a business can locate in any one of the 50 states, why should they choose Illinois? Now, that's a great question, Rauner said. You know what? That's the number one reason I ran for governor, is to give a good answer to that, because we should be one of the fastest-growing states where businesses want most to come. As he often does, speaking to business groups and others, the governor touted the state's location, transportation and agricultural assets, and hard-working people. But he said taxes and regulations are holding the state back. Teacher Julie Bauer said the experience gave the students an up-close and personal look at the government. It's one thing to read about it, but it's another thing to walk into the Capitol, where the laws are made and people can protest and people can really speak for what they believe in, she said. Retired teacher Jeff Deremiah has organized the trip, now in its 46th year since its inception. Trades can open jobs across the country. Trades training opens career possibilities in Decatur. A select group of workers in the Decatur area are taking advantage of training programs for trades that can open long-range career paths. A tour of training facilities for electricians, plumbers, and operating engineers in Decatur and surrounding areas earlier this week provided a look at some of the options that are offered. The Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, along with the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, helped organize the tour for representatives of local businesses, government, and schools. The training has been worthwhile, said C.J. Lemming, who is finishing his fourth year as an apprentice in the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, or IBEW, Local Union 146 training program at the Mid-State Electrical Training Center in Decatur. "It's a big commitment," Lemming said. "Without this, I don't know where I would be." Electrician apprentices are expected to complete 5 years of training, along with another 5 years of work after that, said Jason Drake, training director for the center. In exchange, Drake said, tuition costs are covered as the program is funded by its partner companies and contractors. The number of participants each year is based on the employer's need for workers in a 12-county area of central Illinois, said Josh Sapp, the local IBEW business manager. Students commit to a daily work schedule along with attending weekly classes in the evening. Drake said, the school year mirrors that of high schools and colleges as trainees learn the trade, Drake said. They learn skills that can lead to jobs across the country as journeymen after training is completed, he said. They can go anywhere they want to work, Drake said. Their mobility is not limited. The tour was timed so participants could see some of the training that occurs, said Ryan McCready, the EDC president. It helps to build the relationship between those involved in the construction trades with other sectors of the community, he said. They can see the significant amount of training and how much is invested in it, McCready said. The United Association of Plumbers and Steam Fitters Local 137 has a training facility in Springfield that serves a 16-county territory from Tuscola to the Illinois River, business agent Mark Greenwalt said. Apprentices are trained to work on projects that include various types of systems in schools, hospitals, and other types of commercial and industrial buildings, he said. The training program has changed since services were consolidated in recent years with what used to be offered in Decatur, training coordinator Andy Fuchs said. Classes are offered during the day for a week at a time, Fuchs said. He said it's not an ideal system, but it's working. The results we're seeing are incredible, Fuchs said. Everyone comes out of the apprenticeship with the same skills. Training is designed to give students a hands-on learning experience, Fuchs said. Greenwald said continual training is necessary, providing participants with enhanced career opportunities. We think you can pick something up every day, Greenwald said. We can train you to do whatever you want to do. The International Union of Operating Engineers Local 965 training facility in Buckhart provides a place where students can learn how to safely and precisely operate large pieces of construction equipment, including cranes and motor graders, what looks like a bunch of workers using equipment in a giant sandbox is actually more than that, as trainees learn such tasks as road construction, training coordinator Kent Campbell said. Crane operators learn how to communicate using hand signals, which is most effective at a work site, Campbell said. You can never simulate everything they will encounter out there. We try to get as close as we can, Campbell said. The operating engineer covers a 15-county area, business agent Vince Shaw said. He said apprentices need to complete 6,000 hours of work, which usually takes 4 to 5 years. Campbell said the most recent class of apprentices started training this week. In local news, WCER Dinner welcomes back Bishop Kemi, Mount Zion. The fifth annual dinner of WDCR, Decatur Catholic Radio, at the Mount Zion Convention Center became a joyful homecoming Thursday evening for Bishop Carl Kemi of Wichita, Kansas. A native of rural Shumway, Kemi recalled the 10 years he spent in Decatur, first as a parochial vicar at St. Patrick, from 1986 to 1989, and later as pastor of Holy Family from 1996 to 2002, with a great amount of detail and affection. This May will mark the 30th anniversary of my priestly ordination, he told more than 350 people in attendance. I've spent a third of my priesthood in Macon County. Kemi was ordained bishop of the Diocese of Wichita on May 1, 2014. Another highlight of the evening was the presentation of WDCR's St. Gabriel of Hope Award to Irma Rubenacher of Decatur, who with her husband George is a charter member of Holy Family Parish, who served as a registered nurse in labor and delivery at St. Mary's Hospital for 37 years. Rubenacher retired as assistant director of nursing in 1987. So many women from Holy Family and the entire community would comment that her presence was kind, loving, and reassuring when they were delivering their children, Gary Birschbach said. Quoting Father Joe Malloy, Irma is humble, giving, faithful, compassionate, sharing, loving, and joyful. She radiates the love of Christ. The other nominees were Dan Ashenfelter of Decatur, a faithful volunteer at St. Thomas the Apostle Parish, who retired in 2009 after 40 years with the Decatur Police Department. Dennis and Sharon Hines of Oriana, active members of Our Lady of Lourdes, and Sister Chaminade Kelly, a registered nurse at St. Mary's Hospital since 1991 and parish nurse for St. James and Patrick's Parish. During his remarks, Bishop Kemmy remembered an occasion 3 or 4 years ago when he was still Vicar General for the Springfield Diocese and asked to cover one weekend at St. Patrick in Decatur. A parishioner said he was inspired to come to confession by listening to Catholic radio. I was a believer in Catholic radio then, but I'm even more of a believer now, he said. Friends providing Catholic radio is one of the ways we as a church connect with our people. Kemi concluded by telling members of the audience how joyful they had made him, not just tonight, but throughout my priesthood. I hope in some small way my ministry here among you, but also my thoughts and prayers with you, will now impart to you a joy and a feeling of being blessed as much as I feel. Chance to dump appreciated. Residents appreciate chance to dump. Decatur, vehicles loaded with mattresses, couches, tires, and other trash streamed into the Decatur Civic Center parking lot Thursday as residents seized the chance to dump items for free. The City of Decatur offered the event in partnership with Advanced Disposal in hopes of reducing the amount of items that are dumped illegally in vacant lots and alleyways. The Decatur City Council is really committed to cleaning up the neighborhood, said Rochelle Irons, Director of Neighborhood Services. Without a service like this, we're afraid that they'll end up in alleys and other right-of-ways. At least two other city cleanup events are planned for this year, although dates have not yet been set. Irons hopes to schedule at least one on a Saturday. Decatur police and city staff members directed traffic and even helped some residents lift their items onto the roll-off trash receptacles. Francie Johnson and Jean Mears, board members of the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations, also volunteered their time to help. Illegal dumping is a big problem in neighborhoods, Johnson said. This is a good thing. At least it won't show up in our neighborhoods and they won't block alleys with trash, she said. Residents can contact their garbage haulers once a year to pick up a total of 5 items for free, said Tamara Myers, office manager for Advanced Disposal. After that, pickups can be arranged for additional charge. But the opportunity to dump at no cost was attractive to many, such as Adrian Bean. Bean, 32, saw the cleanup event advertised on Facebook and was happy to get rid of her daughter's old mattresses. We got a new bed for her, and these have just been sitting in the garage for a few months, she said, waiting until the weather got warmer so she could set them out for the garbage hauler. Electronics and paint were not accepted Thursday, but Macon County Environmental Management has planned several events throughout the year to accept those items. Myers said she receives the most calls about how to dispose of electronics that cannot be taken to the landfill. That's the biggest issue that people struggle with or get frustrated with, she said. The next 2 electronic recycling events are scheduled from 9 a.m. to noon on June 18th and October 8th at Progress City USA next to Richland Community College campus. For more information, visit www.macongreen.com. That's all one word, lowercase, macongreen.com. Here's local briefs, April 15th. Bement, Coffee with Bill. State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican of Forsyth, will host a Coffee with Bill town meeting from 11 a.m. to noon Saturday, April 16th at the Bement Municipal Center at 148 West Bodmin Street, Bement. Anyone with concerns or questions regarding the state is encouraged to attend. Decatur, Lego Castle Creations. Bob Carney will give a presentation on his Lego castles at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, April 16th, in the Macon County History Museum, 5580 North Fork Road. He began modeling real medieval castles in Lego in July 1986 and is working on his 152nd creation. Admission is $2. Forsyth. Senior Outreach, the Macon County Senior Center, CHELP, and Macon County Health Department are partnering on a senior outreach event 1 to 3 p.m. Wednesday, April 20th at the Forsyth Public Library, 268 South Elwood Street. Information will be provided about services or discounts seniors might qualify for and possible Medicare savings. Representatives will be available to answer questions. Excuse me, Springfield. Federal disaster loans. The U.S. Small Business Administration has approved the state's request for assistance to help people and businesses in Christian and Iroquois counties recover from severe storms and floods in late December, according to Governor Bruce Rauner's office. Residents and business in the contiguous counties of Macon, Shelby, Ford, Kankakee, Montgomery, Sangamon, and Vermilion counties are also eligible for low-interest long-term loans made available by the declaration. A damage assessment conducted in February identified 33 homes and 6 businesses in Christian County that met the assistance eligibility criteria of sustaining major uninsured losses of 40% or more. More information about the disaster loan program will be announced later. State and regional Effingham fishing lure show sure to entice collectors. Effingham, now would be a good time to go angling in the attic for great-grandfather's dusty fishing lures. An antique and collectible fishing show being staged in Effingham on Saturday will offer free evaluations to the public who bring in ancient fishing tackle. You can then opt to sell at a public auction at the show and are free to accept or reject the price you get. The public auction is to protect people, said Dave Boyer of Strasburg, who has co-hosted the show for 15 years with friend and fellow collector Brent Vonderhyde. A public auction is the fairest way to sell things. The show is being staged in the Knights of Columbus Hall at 1510 West Fayette Avenue, which is exit 159 off Interstate 70. The show is for members of the National Fishing Lure Collectors Club, but non-members can also browse and shop for a $5 a day membership. The show is open to the public from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Boyer said the National Club has more than 4,000 members all over the world, and collecting lures and fishing gear of all kinds is a thriving pastime. We'll have 100-plus tables of tackle at our show, and we usually have anywhere from 250 to 300 people come through, he said. We should have people coming from 10 states, and in the past, we've had collectors come here from as far as Japan. Boyer, a collector himself for 20 years, said the fun of the show is that you never know what great catch you will find or what members of the public will bring in. He remembers the example of some local people who showed a collection of old lures to him, and he arranged for them to be sold at the NFLCC's annual national show. They had a collection pushing about 30 lures, and they cashed out for $11,500, he said. The sellers were very pleased. And anybody who finds a Haskell minnow lure washed up in their attic is likely to have a very rewarding day fishing for dollars. Boyer said an example of this rare metal lure dating back to the 1880s, sold nationally for more than $100,000. For more show information, call 217-644-2294. That's 644-2294 or 690-8290. That's 690-8290. In government and politics, bleak financial future leads to flat county salaries. Decatur. A grim financial future will lead to several elected county officials having flat salaries for the coming years. The salaries of the Macon County Auditor, Circuit Clerk, Coroner, and Recorder will stay at $83,536.93 at least until 2020, and will be part of a plan passed unanimously Thursday night by the County Board. Other elected officials or union employees who hope to see an increase in their salaries in the near future will likely have to pay for it out of their department's budget, said Jay Dunn, chairman of the county's finance committee. We just cannot afford to spend any more, he said. We burned down our budget reserves and our income has maxed out. We've got some tough times ahead. The budget has been a concern for the past year, and a county-wide drop in population and subsequent tax dollars has consistently reduced the amount of money available. The general fund balance at the beginning of the fiscal year in December was about $5.4 million, nearly $3 million less than the beginning of the budget year, and is at its lowest point since 2007. The county had to use its $1.5 million of its rainy day fund to supplement its general fund, which pays for the basic operation of county departments, leaving just $164,000 in there at the start of April. With the possibility of more cuts and layoffs in the near future, Board Chairman Kevin Greenfield said there was no way to justify giving officials a salary increase. We're going to go through some tough financial times, and we may have to get to the point, and I hope not, where there will be layoffs, he said. If we're talking about doing that, then there's no way we can increase these salaries. In other business, the county unanimously approved a plan to implement a $75 fee to be charged to lenders when they file a foreclosure action to help pay for a mortgage foreclosure mediation program in circuit court. The county received approval last month from the Illinois Supreme Court to operate the program, which requires the lender and the borrower in a foreclosure case to meet with a mediator who would explore ways the borrower's mortgage loan could be reworked or reinstated. If mediation is unsuccessful, the case would then proceed to circuit court for foreclosure. The fee, which would be applied only to the mortgage company, is effective immediately. The program is expected to begin this summer. Government and politics. Proposal would give teens attorney in homicide interrogations. Springfield. Children ages 13 to 17 couldn't be interrogated in homicide investigations without an attorney present under a proposal being considered in the Illinois Senate. State Senator Patricia Van Pelt, Democrat of Chicago, said she's sponsoring the legislation because children shouldn't be allowed to waive their right to have an attorney present when being questioned by police in such serious matters. They can't even go on a field trip if they don't have parental consent, Van Pelt said, adding that it begs for a response from the state Senate. The bill would extend protections similar to those currently granted to children 12 and younger and would apply to custodial interrogations. Under state law, that means a reasonable person in the same situation would believe he or she was in police custody and that the questioning is reasonably likely to elicit an incriminating response. If the bill becomes law, any statements made during such interrogations without a lawyer present couldn't be used in court. Elizabeth Clark, president and founder of the Evanston-based Juvenile Justice Initiative, has been pushing for a similar measure for more than a decade. This is a ridiculously modest proposal, whose time should have come 20 years ago, Clark said. Similar measures have been in place across Europe for nearly a decade, she said. Proponents believe the change is necessary because courts have allowed confessions that children have made without an attorney present to be used against them in court. Courts have ruled that such statements can be used even if police use deception or subterfuge to elicit a confession, according to the Juvenile Justice Initiative. False confessions are also common, supporters say. The measure would allow county public defenders' offices to represent children during interrogations, but they would be removed from a case following the first court appearance if a judge determines that a family can pay for its own lawyer. In a county without a full-time public defender, the police agency doing the interrogation would be required to connect the child with the attorney who provides those services for the county. There was a brief debate on Van Pelt's bill Thursday on the Senate floor, but she agreed to hold off on calling it for a vote at the request of Senate Minority Leader Christine Redonio, Republican of Lamont. Redonio said that she felt she might be able to support a bill but wanted Van Pelt to meet with members of her party who believe she'd agreed to meet with them about the bill. One of those members was Senator Dale Ryder, Republican of Mattoon, a former Coles County prosecutor. Ryder said the bill is vaguely worded and could place a large burden on police officers. I can come up with 100 different scenarios where a juvenile may not be literally the target of homicide investigation, but winds up through the course of the interview being one, Ryder said. What does the police officer do at that point? Suddenly stop the interview? He also worries that a child might provide information about others that would then be inadmissible in court because he or she became a suspect and was questioned without an attorney. Ameren aims to prevent dog bites. There's a growing new threat to be added to the risks of downed power lines and ruptured gas mains faced by Ameren, Illinois workers, dog attacks. The utility says that more than 40 linemen, gas workers, meter readers, and others have sustained injuries in the past 5 years, severe enough to require medical attention. The number of attacks continues to trend upward, and not included in the bite statistics are dozens of what the utility calls near misses, where the worker was able to escape. But even when the employee runs away, it doesn't mean that he or she lives to fight another day without sustaining injury. One lineman, for example, who tried to jump a fence to escape a dog, got his pants legs caught and wound up breaking a leg in two places. Ameren, Illinois is urging homeowners to properly secure their pets, but it isn't just taking a passive stance on putting the bite on dog bites. It's hired specialist firm Bully Ray that travels around teaching the utility staff how to avoid and how to defend against dog attacks. The 2-hour training sessions use dogs as part of the learning curve, and volunteers clad in protective suits to experience a scary moment of a dog attack and a dog bite. Ameren, Illinois spokesman Brian Brech said the utility's senior director of Division Operations North, Craig Gilson, has stepped up to volunteer at one of the training sessions and got an adrenaline jolt to remember. Craig described it as a life-changing event, something he'll never forget. Customers are warned not to secure their dog to a utility meter or power pole and to post "Beware of the Dog" warning signs. Customers are also urged to call the utility so the presence of a dog can be noted on their account for future reference. That's at 1-800-755-5000. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 15th, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.